States v. Lindsay.
Good morning. I'm George Tassif with the Federal Public Defender in Peoria, Illinois, representing the defendant appellant, Aaron Lindsay. We're raising two issues in this appeal, but I want to briefly address the motion to suppress question first and put that aside so I can focus the majority of my time on the confrontation cross-examination issue. Judge Mimmon, denying this motion to suppress, found that the roadside search of Mr. Lindsay's vehicle and the search of the contents of this red suitcase were justified by the inventory search exception of the Fourth Amendment. Now, as the record reveals, however, and as government counsel points out in his brief, that warrantless search of the trunk and the search of the suitcase, that was all preceded by the canine alert on the vehicle when the second officer arrived pursuant to the first officer's request for assistance to have the vehicle towed. The canine alert then, according to Illinois versus Caballos, would trigger another exception to the warrant requirement, even though Judge Mim in his findings specifically said that the dog alert was irrelevant to the district court's ruling in its case. So, in all candor to the court and to opposing counsel, there's very little, if anything, I can say in reply to the government's position that Caballos provides an exception to the Fourth Amendment. That
so you're conceding that the trooper had probable cause to search the trunk after the dog sniff?
Well, I'm conceding that Caballos would trigger an exception independent of the inventory search.
Which would be the dog sniff.
Yes, because in this instance, there was no evidence at all that the Illinois State Police had an inventory search policy at the time of this case that would justify searching closed containers and suitcases. Be that as it may, the confrontation question here, I think, is one of the most challenging I've seen in some time. And I respectfully submit that the restriction on cross-examination that Judge Mims in limine ruling put on us was to impact directly Mr. Lindsay's core value and protection under the Sixth Amendment Confrontation Clause.
So explain to me what, in light of all the cross-examination that did take place of Mr. Jones and the reference to the, quote, very serious felony charge, making it clear to the jury that that was actually murder, why would that have affected the jury so much that this is reversible at this point? The jury knew Mr. Jones was a pretty terrible character.
As unsavory an individual as could be. But we know from the facts that were elicited that he cut his deal with the federal government on the pending drug case in federal court.
And that
where
came
he,
out.
Where right? he capped his exposure to 20 years.
20 years.
And
right.
was so bold as to write his girlfriend and co-defendant that he was going to get 7 years off that 20-year sentence.
You put that in the record. I mean, it could have been braggadocio,
The crux, though, and the reason I respectfully submit we were denied this knockout punch on Mr. Mosley or Jones's, whatever name he went by at that time, a credibility, was the fact that his testimony was he got out of Cook County in the spring of 07 because of the Cook County case. When arrested, he falsely told the arresting officer and then two DEA agents during two post-arrest interviews his cousin's name, date of birth, and Social Security number.
And
why?
All of that came out during cross-examination,
because
didn't it?
He wanted to avoid arrest on the Cook County matter.
And all
everything
of that
was related
came out.
To Cook County. And then the jury then is left in the dark with respect to what would motivate him to do such heinous things and thereby point the finger of blame at Mr. Lindsay, whose drugs, he said, were in Mosley's and Jarville Jones's suitcase. It was Jones who put that red suitcase in the car. It was Jones who admitted at trial, that's my suitcase, and that's my ecstasy pills and my marijuana, but it's not my crack cocaine. That's Mr. Lindsay's. All felonies, by definition, are serious offenses because they carry the risk of imprisonment. Some are more serious than others. I respectfully submit that in all of the Illinois Criminal Code, murder is the most serious felony offense there is, because it carries 20 to 60 years upon conviction, and if aggravating factors are present, could trigger enhanced penalties all the way up to the death penalty.
Mr. Tassif, you started out your argument by mentioning the core value of impeaching, which triggers a de novo review. But you've argued throughout your brief an abuse of discretion. What are you arguing for here?
I'm arguing, upon reconsideration...
Are you going back to the core value now, which you seem to argue something different in your brief?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, this Court's rulings suggest to me, as I read them, that if we were allowed to cross-examine as to a portion of the subject matter we sought to cross on, and if the Court then cuts us off, then it would be an abuse of discretion. Whereas the cases, Van Arsdale and Davis versus Alaska, those dealt with instances where the Court flat-out prohibited inquiry at all on that subject matter. So we were allowed to inquire as to the pending warrant and complaint from Cook County, but I respectfully submit that the restriction placed on us was so onerous as to render it a complete denial altogether. Now, if the Court wants to take
an
abuse...
Now, that would be an extension of Van Arsdale and Davis, okay. so it sounds like you're admitting. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So. But if this Court does apply an abuse of discretion, I respectfully submit it was indeed an abuse of discretion.
The district judge was worried. He doesn't cite 403, but he pretty much says, you know, the prejudicial impact... Because what this is about, this is not a trial of Mr. Jones for committing murder. This is a trial of Mr. Lindsay. And the question is Mr. Jones telling the truth when he's talking about this?
And as the Supreme Court has said, when we're talking about issues that would affect motive and bias, we should have the broadest latitude in cross-examination, because these are prototypical means of cross and for purposes of confrontation. Respectfully, the Court's only explanation on the record on the motion in limine was that there is probative value, the Court said, and this is in the appendix, but that the Court found undue prejudice to the government. How could the government suffer prejudice by our eliciting a fact that the government is not disputing, that everybody concedes existed, and that shows this is why their star witness chose to leave Cook County, travel an interstate to avoid apprehension, obstruct justice, give false statements, and point the finger at a co-defendant and say it's his drugs, so he gets life and I don't?
Well, so maybe the Court's worried, though, about whether the jury is going to see all of this in the way you just described, that Mr. Jones has this powerful reason to point the finger at somebody else, or whether, on the other hand, the jury's just going to look at Mr. Jones and think, you're a murderer, we're not going to listen to anything you say, we don't care about motive, sentence, anything, you're just a terrible human being.
I could never argue that to a jury. But
I know you're not allowed to.
Wasn't
the Court worried, though?
What I could have argued is that Marvell Jones had 20 to 60 years worth of reasons to point the finger at Mr. Lindsay and say it's his dope in Mr. Jones's suitcase. I would have allowed them to deliver a far more powerful closing argument.
Did you ask the district court if you could make that 20 to 60 year argument based on the very serious felony?
No, I was not allowed to.
But did you ask? I know you couldn't go into the murder, but the consequences of the various serious felony.
No.
Did you ask the district court if you could make that argument?
No, and because the court said, I'm only going to allow very serious felony. The ruling speaks for itself.
But a very serious felony could have a result of 20 to 60 years in prison.
And a very serious felony could be possession of more than 30 grams of marijuana for 1 to 3 years in prison. I mean, again, the jury has no idea what context this very serious standard is being proffered to the jury, so the jury could then assess what credibility and weight this man's testimony ought to be given.
So you understood Judge Mim to be saying what you could say and to be shutting off anything beyond that, as opposed to being open for I mean, I think as Judge St. Eve is suggesting, you know, even though you had to call it a very serious felony charge, you didn't feel free to say one which carries with it, you know, potential life sentence. Or
everybody in the courtroom understood that ruling to limit my inquiry solely to the words, and we all wrote them down, very serious felony in Cook County. If I broached that subject any other way, I'd be held in contempt of court.
So, in other words, you felt that you were not free to say a very serious felony that carried with it a life sentence.
I knew I couldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the prejudicial effect is that we had to deal with as unsavory a character who we could show through our cross had cut his deal with the federal prosecutors well enough to boast that he's only going to do 7 years on a 20-year cap. But the jury then had no context to see what unfinished business Jarvell Jones had with respect to his very serious matter in Cook County. So for these reasons, this error impacted directly Mr. Lindsay's right to a fair trial, and we ask that his conviction be reversed.
Thank you, Mr. Caffey.
Mr. Cox. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. I think it's clear, but the only thing that Mr. Tassif was prohibited from doing with regard to Mr. Jones in this case was to mention the word murder.
But that's a pretty big thing. I mean, really, don't you think the jury would have thought if Mr. Jones had assured for himself some immunity from big consequences for the murder that would have influenced the jury?
That might have been, Your Honor, but of course he was only charged at that point. He was not convicted of murder. And the record is that there was absolutely no contacts between Mr. Jones and the prosecutors in Cook County, which had sought the murder charge and obtained it, or that he had any promises or expectations with regard to that pending charge. So what Mr. Tassif was able to do was to show that he had a very serious charge. Who knows what the jurors thought. That was. They knew he'd already been convicted of drug offenses.
He mentioned a very serious charge, carrying 20 to 60 years as a possible penalty under Judge Mims' ruling.
Well, it didn't come up, and I wasn't a participant. Mr. Tassif was. I don't know the context of everything that was said, but certainly Mr. Tassif did not ask Judge Mims, well, in view of your ruling, may I bring out that as a result of this very serious charge, he's facing 20 to 60 years imprisonment. Mr. Tassif didn't ask that. Judge Mims didn't address it. So whether there was a context that this is it, don't say anything else, I can't speak to that, Your Honor. But, of course, in a lot of trials that I've been involved in, defense attorneys want to bring in sentencing issues with regard to cooperating witnesses, and oftentimes I object. And we have hearings about it because it leads into issues that really aren't, they're just not probative of the trial. They're not relevant to the trial. Now, in this case, clearly, Mr. Tassif brought out very effectively that on the federal charge, where there was an agreement, where he did get something of significant value in return for his testimony, that he could have faced life imprisonment. And he was going to get a cap of 20 years. So, and obviously an expectation or a hope on his part through the letters to his girlfriend that he was going to get even less from the prosecutors in return for his testimony. So the jurors knew that Mr. Jones was facing significant amounts of prison time, whether it was from this pending very serious felony or from the very offense to which he'd already pled guilty in federal court.
But I don't think it's the prison time per se that Mr. Tassif is arguing. He's arguing that that is an extra incentive for him to lie because of what he was potentially facing in the state court for the murder charges.
Well, I think, as Mr. Tassif told Judge Mims, his purpose in wanting to ask these questions, the core purpose for it was to be able to suggest that Mr. Jones had another reason to fabricate his testimony, to implicate Mr. Lindsay, to curry favor with these prosecutors, these faceless prosecutors at this point in Cook County.
The most powerful reason of all, of course. You know, what could be worse than a murder charge?
That's only the word itself, Your Honor. It seems to me that the word itself, then, you're suggesting carries something much more significant than just the fact that Mr. Jones was facing a very serious felony offense for which he had motive to potentially curry favors with those state court prosecutors, just as he was trying to curry favor with the federal prosecutors, which had charged him with possession of these drugs to which he'd pled guilty and was hoping not to get a or was not going to get a sentence of more than 240 months in prison as a result of the deal that he cut.
So I assume you would have violently, or whoever the prosecutor would have violently objected if Mr. Tassif had wanted to say to Mr. Jones a very serious felony charge that carries with it the possibility of a death sentence.
I think I would have, yes, Your Honor.
Even though that's true, I mean, at least it's technically true in Illinois, moratoria to one side.
I can see that Judge Mim, had Mr. Tassif made that argument, very well might have exercised his discretion, decided that he would be entitled to do that. As a prosecutor, I would have tried to keep that out, but I don't know that I would have been successful, and obviously I don't get to decide that. So
sure, I'm just thinking that, I mean, if you want to know, is Mr. Jones motivated to play ball with the prosecutors, given that it was a murder charge, not bank robberies, not, you know, other kinds of drug charges that might have carried extremely long sentences. It might have been interesting for the jury to know that.
It might have been interesting, Your Honor, but of course it might be interesting for jurors to know lots of things, and we don't.
Right, but they're entitled to assess bias and motive to lie.
Absolutely.
And here you have this red suitcase in the back of the car, and supposedly, I guess, Mr. Jones opening it up and letting Mr. Lindsay throw in his crack. It's an interesting. Would you have also argued constructive possession on Mr. Lindsay's part, even if the suitcase had never been touched by him and it had been Jones who put all the drugs in?
I think as part of the conspiracy, we would have probably argued Pinkerton liability as well as probably constructive possession, Your Honor. Yes. And, of course, the other thing, Mr. Jones' testimony wasn't the only testimony, and I'm not suggesting that that somehow means that the cross-examination that Mr. Tassif proposed is less important. I don't mean that. But he wasn't the only witness who implicated Mr. Lindsay in this conspiracy. I mean, there was his girlfriend, and there were some other witnesses as well. He clearly was a very important witness, and I wouldn't suggest otherwise. But I guess my point is, Mr. Tassif says this was one of the most unsavory characters he's ever come in contact with, and based on the record, I would agree with that. But every wart that this gentleman had, with the exception of the fact the very serious felony was a murder, was brought to the attention of the jury. So the only thing that Mr. Tassif was prohibited from doing in this particular case was saying the word murder. And I think that in the context of the entire case, then, this just simply was not reversible error. The court has no further questions. I yield the balance of my time. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
One of those warts we exposed was asking Mr. Jones point blank, in your opinion, sir, are you a truthful person? He said, sometimes yes, sometimes no. So when facing liability for murder one, sometimes, yeah, he can be as untruthful as he wants to be. And again, it's a theory of proportionality. The more serious the crime on the spectrum of serious felonies, the more motivation he's going to have to point the finger to somebody else.
But why would that have helped? I mean, the best he can do is say the red suitcase was mine and mine alone. I mean, because, you know, instead of being Mr. Lindsay's. But if they were in this conspiracy together, why does that help?
Because he's caught point blank lying his teeth out with respect to who he is and why he's in that car, and then admits that it's his suitcase, and then is on the hooks to 20 to life for a federal drug conspiracy case, and the reason he's in that car and getting out of Cook County is because he wants to avoid arrest for a murder one prosecution in Cook County, a murder which, by the way, occurred a year earlier before his arrest, so he knew why he had to get out. This wasn't something that was thrown on him after he was apprehended. Final point, this business about, well, there was no promises made to Mr. Lindsay by Cook County. On page 29 of my brief, I cite D.C. Circuit cases where they're saying that doesn't matter. It's the witness's expectations and hopes for leniency as to what he can do. And this is a guy who, as it appears in the appendix, is bold enough to tell his own girlfriend, I'm going to beat that case in Cook County. The jury should have been allowed to know what kind of case it was and thereby denied him a fair trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tassif. Thank you, Mr. Cox. Case is taken under advisement.